content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Bahati Mutisia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazine. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Teen Vogue. The first article for today's program is Who Was Maggie Kuhn? Co-founder of the elder activist group The Gray Panthers. This article is by Marilyn Lewinies. It was published August 2nd, 2019, and it is part of Teen Vogue's OG History series, where we unearth history not told through a white, cis-hetero-patriarchal lens. You're never too old to make a change. Consider the case of Maggie Kuhn. At age 65, the petite, gray-haired woman took it upon herself to make history-altering moves after she was forced into retirement. Rather than passively accept the age discrimination she faced, Kuhn committed her retirement and the remainder of her life to fighting ageism in the United States. In 1970, with the help of other older Americans forced out of the workplace because of their age, Kuhn co-founded the Gray Panthers, an organization dedicated to combating age discrimination. A play on the Black Panthers, the name was originally a press-given nickname meant to invoke the quick-witted, action-oriented nature of its members. It has since become a world-famous moniker. Kuhn, who was friendly with Black Panthers co-founder Bobby Seale, eventually adopted the name in 1972. The name Gray Panthers conjures the power of older people to be themselves and to fight for their rights, Jack Kupferman, president of Gray Panthers NYC, told Teen Vogue. Not only is there a spunk to our efforts, but often positive change results. Along with the civil rights and Chicanx movement of the 1960s and 1970s, Kuhn's fight for social justice and liberation altered modern history for the better. Kuhn's legacy was so impactful, consumer advocate and political activist Ralph Nader once called Kuhn's retirement the most significant retirement in modern American history. Prior to her death in 1995, Kuhn's group worked to enact nursing home reform, successfully lobbied to change Medicare regulations, and helped eliminate forced retirement provisions with an amendment to the Age Discrimination in Employment Act of 1967. During the group's formative years, they were heavily involved with protesting the Vietnam War and demonstrated alongside people of varying generations. The Gray Panthers proudly identify as a militant, though nonviolent group, forcing their way into the upper echelons of U.S. political power and demanding action. In their first full year of operation, the Gray Panthers stormed the White House and requested access to the Presidential Conference on Aging. Kuhn often threatened to stage trolley car strikes in Philadelphia and even called out President Gerald Ford when she disagreed with his patronizing remarks, according to AARP. A lifelong activist, Kuhn's passion for equitability began long before her 65th birthday. Her advocacy and social activism seemed to develop during her years working as a teacher for the Young Women's Christian Association in the 1920s and 1930s. At the YWCA, Kuhn championed progressive ideals, specifically ones that advocated for the rights of working women. During her time at the WCA, Kuhn taught a particularly controversial class on human sexuality, which discussed sexual pleasure, birth control, and pregnancy, among many other controversial topics. During a time when feminism and female sexuality was highly stigmatized, Kuhn made it her mission to inform her students about these taboo issues. Kuhn's interest in elder rights seemed to begin in earnest in 1961, after she attended a White House conference on aging, according to Kupferman. Throughout her work, the United Presbyterian Church, where she spent 25 years, Kuhn visited numerous nursing homes and began investing in changing the way people saw elders, Kupferman notes. Rather than treating seniors like they were invisible, Kuhn wanted the world to see older generations as a vital part of society. The rights and concerns of older people have always been invisible and never taken seriously, Kupferman explained. Kuhn was one of those iconic activists that said, enough, and wanted people to understand that older people are a part of the world and they must contribute to the positive progress of humanity. For Kuhn, aging was not a sign of weakness or vulnerability, but a victory meant to be celebrated. A physically frail woman, Kuhn wasn't interested in complaining about her physical ailments. Kuhn, who never married, was fiercely independent and shared her life with her two cats, Emily and Charlotte Bront. She also spent part of her life caring for her disabled mother and mentally ill brother. During her time with the Grey Panthers, Kuhn authored several books and became a national darling after appearing on late-night talk shows. While ageism was at the forefront of Kuhn's activism, Kupferman noted that the elderly icon was also an advocate for seniors embracing their sexuality and for intergenerational cooperation, breaking down stereotypes and barriers often associated with aging. She once suggested that older women who couldn't find lovers should turn to each other, a statement that caused some heated backlash and was rumored to have had a fling with a 21-year-old man when she was 71. Old age is not a disease, Kuhn said in a 1978 interview. Old age is strength and survivorship, triumph over all kinds of vicissitudes and disappointments, trials and illnesses. Although the fight against ageism started in earnest in the 1970s to today, today Americans who are 65 years and older remain vulnerable to physical abuse and financial victimization. Politicians frequently threaten to slash the Social Security benefits on which they depend, and pension plans covering some 1.5 million Americans remain fiscally unstable. Thankfully, Kuhn's legacy continues to create change for seniors across America. In addition to advocating for accessible Medicare information and holding major drug companies accountable for safe and affordable prescription drugs, the Grey Panthers have committed to fighting for welfare, workfare reform, economic justice, and against false societal stigmas about aging. The Grey Panthers currently have 25 active chapters nationwide. Kupferman believes that Kuhn's contributions to U.S. history are as important now as they were when the group started. He says that her influence should inspire future generations to take action against discrimination and elder inequality. She should be the inspiration for every generation to get up, do something, make sure your voices are heard, and fight for what's right. The next episode is titled, Savage and Up TikTok Dance Creators May Soon Own Copyrights to Their Work. This article is by Lauren Rierich, was published July 30th of 2021. Kira Wilson, the creator of a viral TikTok dance for Megan Thee Stallion's single Savage, has taken the first step to secure a long-awaited copyright of her work, Variety reported. The news comes as Black creators continue to struggle with creating original online content that is then taken by white creators who profit from it, often without credit. In July, some Black creators pulled off a strike, refusing to create dances for Meg's Thought blank. In case you somehow missed it on your For You page, Kira created a dance for Savage that became a global sensation. Despite its increasing popularity, Kira was often left out of conversations and proper credit surrounding where the dance originated. Now, she and a handful of other creators are on the path to owning their work in the legal sense, thanks to the work of dancer and choreographer Jaquel Knight. As pointed out by Afrotech and Variety, Jaquel and his The Jaquel Knight Foundation partnered with Logitech to help multiple creators for BIPOC. Through the partnership, both the foundation and Logitech intend to help creators of color get the copyrights for their work. A press release announced that Kira, along with six others, were among those initially helped by the collaboration. They were presented with lab annotations of their choreo, which Variety noted is the first step in helping the creators secure copyrights to their choreography. Other recipients include Maya Johnson and Chris Cotter, the creators of A Dance to Cardi B's Up, the Nene Twins, creators of A Savage Remix Dance, and Young Deji, the creator of The Woe Dance. A full list of creators aided by the initiative can be viewed in a link to this article. According to a press release, Knight and Logitech plan to help more creators secure copyrights in the future. Copywriting movement is about putting the power back in the artist's hands, Knight told Variety. During a speech at the ceremony, Knight added, "How much longer do we allow for the art of choreography and the art of dance to be taken advantage of?" The next article is titled, "Simone Biles Has Teammates' Support After Olympic Withdrawal to Protect Her Mental Health." Simone Biles has pulled out of both the team and individual all-around finals at the Tokyo Olympics in efforts to prioritize her well-being. This article is by Caitlin McNabb and was published July 28, 2021. It's official. American gymnast Simone Biles will not be competing in the final individual all-around competition at the Tokyo Olympic Games. In a statement released by USA Gymnastics on social media, Biles officially withdrew on Wednesday to focus on her mental health, one day after pulling out of the team gymnastics finals. Simone will continue to be evaluated daily to determine whether or not to participate in next week's individual event finals, the statement read. Jade Carey, who had the ninth highest score in qualifications, will participate in her place in the all-around. USA Gymnastics extended their support towards Biles' decision to withdraw, lauding her prioritization of her mental health as an act of bravery. The USA Gymnastics tweets reads, "After further medical evaluation, Simone Biles has withdrawn from the final individual all-around competition. We wholeheartedly support Simone's decision and applaud her bravery in prioritizing her well-being. Her courage shows, yet again, why she is a role model for so many." According to the New York Times, Biles twisted fewer times than she had planned during vault on Tuesday. Per the Associated Press, Biles afterwards left the podium and consulted with the team's doctor, returning to the area in a sweatsuit. She did not compete in uneven bars following the vault. Instead, teammate Jordan Chiles stepped in. Biles later told reporters that she had a little bit of the twisties, which is a disconnection between the body and the mind that some gymnasts can experience, in which they become disoriented while twisting in the air, unable to control or track their bodies, regardless of how many times they practiced and completed the skill. "I had no idea where I was in the air," Biles said. "I could have hurt myself." Many former gymnasts empathize with Biles on social media, explaining that mental health blocks like the twisties commonly occur while under pressure and can be extremely dangerous to even basic gymnasts, let alone gymnasts of Biles' caliber. Biles has spoken on social media about the pressure she's endured leading up to this year's Olympic Games, saying she feels as though she has the weight of the world on her shoulders. The 24-year-old has dominated the sport since she began competing. For Biles, the most decorated gymnast of all time, with four Olympic gold medals under her belt, the expectations are high, which makes the stakes of injury even higher amidst mental health challenges. "We also have to focus on ourselves, because at the end of the day, we're human too," Biles told reporters after her initial withdrawal on Tuesday. "So we have to protect our mind and our body rather than just go out there and do what the world wants us to do." Biles has faced harsh criticism for her decision to withdraw to protect her mental health, but has also received waves of support from the public and fellow professional athletes like Michael Phelps and former teammates Allie Raisman and Lori Hernandez. In an interview with Today on Wednesday, current U.S. gymnast team members Jordan Chiles and Grace McCallum made clear their support for their teammate no matter what. "She's Simone for a reason," said Chiles. "She's not a quitter. You will never see Simone just go out there and not do what she knows she can do." According to the Los Angeles Times, during a news conference on Tuesday following Biles' withdrawal, Chiles comforted Biles. Chiles comforted Biles as she spoke to the press. "I just don't trust myself as much as I used to, and I don't know if it's age," Biles said. "I'm a little bit more nervous when I do gymnastics. I feel like I'm also not having as much fun, and I know that this Olympic Games, I wanted it to be for myself. I came in, and I felt like I was still doing it for other people. So it hurts my heart that doing what I love has been kind of taken away from me to please other people." It is currently unclear whether Biles will be competing in the upcoming individual events next week, but per USA Gymnastics' statement, she will be assessed daily. Many have pointed out that Biles' resilience is astounding. She's previously competed and won with broken toes, a kidney stone, and while publicly navigating the trauma of sexual abuse. While it takes an incredible amount of determination and force to persevere, it can be argued that it takes an even greater amount of strength to prioritize rest. Only Biles knows how long her step back from the mat will take, or will last. But one thing is for sure, she has the support of so many behind her, including teammates and best friends like Chiles. "I am her teammate. I am her best friend," like she said. "This is the moment that I think that I truly realize that I've gotten so much closer to her than I really thought," said Chiles. "She's my ride or die. I will forever be by her side." And the last article is titled, "Paralympic Athlete Ezra Fretch on Being a Role Model, Training During COVID, and What It Means to Be Elite." This article is by Sarah Luderman and was published July 30th, 2021. There are two things you need to know about Ezra Fretch. First, at 16, he is a world-class athlete set to represent Team USA in the high jump, long jump, and 100-meter dash at the Paralympic Games in Tokyo. Paralympic athletes are the elite of the elite, and Fretch is one of the youngest to ever represent the United States at the Paralympic Games. The second thing you need to know, he's funny. On his TikTok, Fretch jokes about how he lost his left leg in a horrific bee accident. Fact check, he was born with congenital limb differences resulting in amputation. And he uses his prosthetic for some truly inspired physical comedy. On the anatomy of a good one-legged man joke, he told me, "It has to be natural." Fretch didn't always feel so comfortable about his body. Arriving at a point of pride was a journey. "When I was younger, I didn't really joke about my disability. I was pretty down on myself. I was in a school where I was the only kid with a disability. I sort of had a 'why me' mentality," he said. As he got older, though, the way Fretch viewed himself changed. "I realized I was born this way," he said. "I might as well just make the most of my life and have a good time." He sees humor as a way to diffuse awkward situations, as well as to express his comfort with himself. "I make jokes to break up the tension. Talking about disability is still a little bit taboo." Sports have always been central to Fretch's life. Instead of mama or papa, his first word was ball. He was fitted with his first athletic prosthetic, more colloquially known as a blade, at age 4. If a sport was in season, Fretch played it. "Soccer season, basketball season, track season, I was sort of all over the place," he said. He played in mainstream sports with his classmates, and still does. In addition to being an internationally ranked para-athlete, Fretch is on his high school's track team. Meeting other disabled athletes, elite athletes who look like him, was a formative experience. The elite guys would come and they would hang out, give advice, talk to the younger kids, he said. There wasn't a specific meet that stands out to Fretch. Just being part of this disabled athletic community was important. When Fretch saw those same athletes competing in the 2016 Paralympic Games, everything crystallized. I saw lots of guys I had competed with and competed against, guys I looked up to, competing in the Paralympics. It was this moment when the universe told me, this is what you're meant to do. I was so fired up, he said. He remembers excitedly telling his parents that he was going to compete in the next Paralympic Games. He was 11 years old at the time. Everyone was like, okay, good luck making the team. But now I actually have made the team, he said, smiling. Fretch loves that he has become like the men who inspired him and looks forward to inspiring young disabled athletes himself. I'm coming to these track meets and talking to these little kids. 5 years ago, I was that little kid. In fact, Fretch was competing alongside some of the men he looked up to for his entire life. When he was 6 months old, his parents took him to a triathlon where they met Rudy Garcia Tolson. Garcia Tolson was 16 and had just qualified for his first Paralympic Games as a swimmer. It was huge for my parents to see another person who had a similar disability to mine. They saw this teenager who just had his stuff figured out. He was cool. He was walking on two prosthetic legs. He was the nicest guy. He helped show my parents that it was possible for me to be active and live a happy, normal life. Tokyo will be Garcia Tolson's fifth Paralympic Games, and Fretch is excited to be on the same team as the man who showed his parents what was possible. It's a full circle moment, Fretch said. Fretch looks up to many of the athletes on Team USA, but was especially delighted to be on the track and field team alongside Sam Grewey, who he describes as a mentor and inspiration. This will be Grewey's second time on Team USA. He was a silver medalist in 2016. Funny story, Fretch said. When I was 11 years old, I said I was going to make the team with him in 2020. And I was like, really? And he said, you'll make it. I promise you. Fretch remembers a moment where he and Grewey were competing in the lead up to the Tokyo Paralympic Games. We looked at each other and we're like, we did it. We did what you told me I could do at 11 years old. Paralympic events are split by type and degree of disability in an effort to promote fair competition. For example, an athlete in a racing chair can move faster than any runner could. Daniel Romanchuk holds the world record for fastest wheelchair marathon. He finished in 1 hour and 13 minutes and 57 seconds. Runners using their own two legs have never managed to dip below 2 hours. Fretch competes in an amputee classification, where high-performance carbon fiber blades could, some argue, give an edge over athletes who rely 100% on their own flesh and blood. For more casual athletes who use prosthetics, there isn't as much thought to the quality of the blade. When I was younger, it was a blade they threw on me to have a good time. There wasn't super focus on having it be the most optimized for track and field, Fretch explained. With the Paralympics, especially the amputee classification, it matters who is in the best shape, who is the strongest and fastest. But there's also the question of how you can interweave the training and body with the technology to use both to the fullest potential. Part of his Paralympic training has involved making little adjustments and perfecting technique and balance that are unique to him. How can we make this leg help me become the fastest, the highest, and farthest jumper within the boundaries of the Paralympics? It's so cool, he grinned. It is important to note that Fretch trains both with and without his prosthetics. He has videos on his Instagram doing one-legged box jumps 54 inches into the air. training during the pandemic was, unsurprisingly, difficult. Los Angeles was very locked down, French said. He and his coach, Latif Avery, would train anywhere he could. They got creative. We didn't have a track. We were in parks. We were in the street. We were at the beach every day of the week, he said. That was the way things went for the first 8 months until school reopened enough that we could use the track and weight room. Vaccination has also expanded his options. Fretch runs the track every week, lifts weights 3 or 4 times a week, and even does exercises at home. Training is really like a full-time job. I'm glad it's summer, and I don't have to balance it with school like I was before. Outside his own training and school, Fretch is proud of the nonprofit he started with his family, Angel City Sports. The organization provides free sports competitions, clinics to the best... The organization provides free sports competitions, clinics to find the best adapted equipment or type of sport for an individual, and more to people with physical disabilities in Southern California, including children and veterans. Fretch is grateful for his family and his friends, but is aware that not every disabled person has what he has. A lot of people with physical disabilities feel like outsiders, he explained. Through Angel City Sports, me and my family are able to bring people together and provide community through sport. My favorite thing outside training is hanging out with kids at Angel City Sports and hanging out with kids and newly disabled adults. You see, grown men and women inspired by the little kid who's 3 years old running around on his prosthetic. And the kids are inspired by older people, not just elite Paralympic athletes, but older people who have made a great life for themselves, he said. At the end of the interview, I told him that I hope my fiancé and I can be those adults for other people. We're both visually impaired, and my fiancé is a dedicated marathon runner. In response, Fretch invited us to come out to Los Angeles sometime to experience the facilities at Angel City Sport ourselves. Have you ever played goal ball? He asked enthusiastically. Goal ball is a sport designed specifically for blind and low vision athletes. Fretch has played it with a blindfold. We had a goal ball clinic last week. You should come out for sure. Well, that's the first time I've heard of goal ball, but that sounds like a good time. Well, this is the end of today's episode of Teen Magazine. Please be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bahati Mutisia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazine is available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.